perfume is the message. Money makes a dance. Love is the product. The joke is in. The joke is in. The joke is in your face.
I'm Are You Serious? And this is my show. He may be the funniest man alive, and yet he's still sort of a local San Francisco secret, but that's not our fault. Our friend, comedian Will Franken, returns once again, our returning champion, to join us on the show today. But first, I look around me, and Jeff Deal is here. Joe Quirk just came floating in out of the ether and happens to be here, and... Hi, Diana Brown. Everybody Hello. Has missed you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I've missed being here, what with, you know, bronchitis rehab, as you like to call it. Yeah. But it's good to be back. And it's a brand new year, and there are changes afoot. RU has a new haircut.
Don't tell people.
Okay, because now they'll be able to recognize you on the street.
Ruin his credibility.
Maybe he doesn't really have... Well, it's a trim, you know? Let's not...
I don't know.
We don't know how much he's taken off. He's just... The ends have been
I'm
trimmed.
Bald.
Okay, he did. He full-on went cue ball on us. But, you know, people are making changes in the new year, and you're not alone, because in South Daytona, Florida, a gentleman named Danny Robert Villegas decided to start the new year back in federal penitentiary.
You must have seen that movie. I didn't see it, but what was it called? Let's Go to Prison?
Maybe so.
I've heard that's the worst movie ever. But
you know what? I read that, and then the next second I read on a different site, like the New York Times, that it was brilliant. And,
oh, yeah?
And, yeah. So,
you know, one man's Chagall is just another man's stick figure. But the thing is this gentleman, I don't know, he strikes me as being both whimsical and determined, because this guy's been out of prison for 5 years, and just a few days ago he decided, I want to see the ocean. And he's determined, so he drove to Florida, saw the ocean, then he ran out of money, and he decided, I want to go back to federal prison. And he was very specific, because he'd done time in a federal penitentiary, and he enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted to go back. So he had to make sure he did a crime worthy of...
Did he say what the charms of the federal penitentiary were for
him? It's like we're sharing the same brain, because that's what I want to know. I mean, I want to know what made the experience so... ideal. I mean, maybe there should be like,
I may be able to answer that question. I had a buddy who taught art to prisoners in a really hardcore prison,
mm-hmm.
and he was teaching painting to a guy whose highest ambition was to get out, have a partial sex change operation,
come back
to the
I
same
was
prison.
Say, yeah.
And be the servant of some
a lot of
guys.
Man meat there. Yeah. That's true.
So what, it's a social situation.
Did you guys see that recent Mammoth film with William H. Macy? What was it called? Monroe or
something? Went by me.
There's this whole story. He goes on this spree where he loses his mind and he starts doing. He's just normal, like button down middle management type. Mm-hmm. Goes nuts, does all this crap, ends up in prison. And he throughout the course of the movie, it's revealed that he's a racist and he commits all these crimes. He's like hate crimes and shit. Ends up in prison, bunked up with a big black man. And then, you know, I mean, it's kind of like a morality play. I don't know if
because he learns that we're not all that different.
No. And he finds sexual satisfaction.
No, yeah,
as well.
What he learns is that he's absolutely happy being a big black man's bitch in prison, and that's like the last scene of the movie. So I just gave away
where he was going in life.
Maybe he wanted to get back to his own true
people
love.
Do find themselves, I think, in one way or another behind prison bars.
There are people that find the real world much more difficult than prison.
Absolutely. That reminds me of the movie The Shawshank Redemption. And do you remember when Red turned to the main character and he said, these walls are funny. First you hate them, then you get used to them. After long enough, you get to depend on them. That's becoming institutionalized.
So is there any more information about this guy in particular? And what did he do? What did he do to get himself?
It was pretty great. I mean, he knew what he wanted, and he knew he needed a ride. So he needed to commit a federal crime. So he said, I'm going to rob a federal bank, and in his case, a federal credit union. And he walked into the Kennedy Space Center Federal Credit Union. He informed the teller that he was robbing her, and she might as well just go ahead and call the police. And then he went and sat down on the couch in the lobby and just waited.
Was he carrying a weapon with him? Because, I mean, if
you
he...
You gotta do something.
You know, otherwise they just... Well, it I would be pretty minor if
that's a
you
question
know,
that I haven't been able
psychiatric
to
psychiatric.
They just rape him with a nightstick and leave him on the side of the road, right?
Yeah. There's no question that is a big question mark. Nobody is able to say what he was carrying or what he told the teller that he had, but he just said, "I'm going to rob you," and I guess the statement of intention is enough to at least get the police to come.
And is he going to undergo a trial, or is he already back where
he is out there awaiting processing, is my understanding.
What about the difference between the federal and local other type of prison?
Are you suggesting like a Priceline.com rating for this?
Well, what I'm saying
is... The judge could decide to send him someplace he's not going to like. But
there is a general kind of understanding that federal prison is a cakewalk compared to like a county prison or something like that.
Maybe that's true. And I will note that this was a federal prison in California.
Right.
Fresno, California.
They teach yoga and meditation.
Well, apparently...
Oh, the place in Fresno?
By contrast to Florida or North Carolina... more people are returned to prison after being paroled in California than any other state. So he blew it, because it's not necessarily certain that he will go back to.
Particularly since somehow he let it be known that he wanted to go back to prison, it would seem that the judge might want to punish him by not putting him in prison or something.
Maybe that would be the biggest. Or send him back to his previous position. He said after being released, he was a roofer in Texas for 5 years, and he didn't really like the work so much. So he would maybe find going back to roofing more of a punishment.
It costs more to keep someone in prison than it does to send them to college. So my name for prison is Free College for Criminals. It's a trade school. They go there, they meet each other, they learn things from other guys, they make connections, they go back out in the world.
And they learn how to commit crimes.
If they need to upgrade their education, really they get arrested and go back to school.
And you'll hear guys interrogated. It's like, well, I knew a cellmate who knew a guy, and then I got in touch with that guy, and it turns out he taught me how to do this.
It's a whole different kind of skull and crossbones old boys network.
Yeah.
And actually, it's a great self-fulfilling thing, right? Because if you get arrested, that means you lacked some key information. Yeah. And then where do they send you? Right to the place where you can get better information for when you get out and conduct your next crime.
Right.
So and then it's just a...
That's in case you want to actually get away with your crime and stay out of prison.
Right. Although the longer you stay out, the less informed you are about how to commit the crime.
The next crime.
My head's ready to explode here.
Sure. I don't think you would be sent to prison for that. Actually, I had a friend who... had some psychological problems. All my friends have had some psychological problems, actually. But
it's called a personality.
He was on SSI, and he wanted to be hospitalized, you know, put him in a mental hospital, and they wouldn't take him in just on the basis of, he's like, well, you've got to do something.
He upped the ante.
So he went out, and he, like, kicked in a window of a store, and... They took him into prison, and they said to him, "Well, well done, you know,
you've accomplished your goal. You gotta have a goal."
Well, there's like people have fetishes, right? What if it's just a matter of like, I really like to be manhandled by large nurses, you know? So maybe it's something like that. Maybe they just get off on it.
It's a tech fetish. He just wants to be wrestled by burly people. Well, you should be comforted in knowing that your barber, the person who trimmed your hair, was not a felon. Because in many states, you're not allowed to become a barber if you have a felony conviction.
Right. Or at least you're not allowed to shave people.
But you are allowed to become president of the United States.
Holding the blade up to the throat.
That's correct.
Can't be a barber. So George Bush couldn't become a barber.
But you can be president or join the military now, because, you know, they have relaxed the army.
Once you're commander in chief, you can shave millions of heads by proxy.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hey, Mom, can I have another bowl of Molly Ringwald cornflakes? They're so tasty and delicious and good for you and nutritious, and they taste so good for you.
Hey, you're 6 years old. You can get your own goddamn cereal. B, there is no such thing as Molly Ringwald cornflakes. And C, I'm not your fucking mother. I think you just learned your ABCs, little man.
Oh, Dad, where is Mom?
Your mother's gone.
Where'd she go?
I don't know. She left this number, though, said for you to give her a call.
Okay. Thanks, Dad.
Whew.
battered women's shelter. Yep. Yep. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Okay, you bet. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Will Franken is a comedian, and since I believe every word of the bio he has posted on his website, I'm going to read a little bit of it for you. Will Franken was born William Franken to a man and a woman, an unlikely pairing given the rampant homosexuality in his hometown of Sedalia, Missouri. In fact, contrary to the relative, quote, redness, unquote, of that particular state, many academic scholars believe William Franken to be the first human baby born of a heterosexual union in the Midwest. Congratulations on that. Human infants in this area are usually grown as crops in cornfields between two flaming farmers.
They raise the babies themselves.
Yeah. Beautiful flaming farmers. And Franken, actually, he met his wife, Carly, at the top of the Space Needle in the VHS box of Sleepless in Seattle. And I hope she didn't fall in. And have to actually spend like 2 hours.
She fell into the needle and liquefied, and then I shot her up.
If she had to spend 2 hours inside that movie, that would have been horrifying.
I've never seen it, but we're big fans of the box.
It would have been
we rent the box all the time and then just put it up and just stare at it for 2 hours.
Avoid falling in. And after a week, they moved to the DVD cover of When Harry Met Sally, so Carly could be closer to her father, Billy Crystal, not to be confused with my friend Billy Crystal Meth. They currently divide their time between Mick Jagger's trousers, which, you know, I was there last week, and it's hard to get a room.
It is hard.
Cover of Sticky Fingers, that's right, and their summer home is on the rugged cliffs of Sarah Jessica Parker's nose.
Yeah.
And I didn't know this, but Franken is an avid golfer, rock climber, politician, slam poet, and social activist when he pretends to be people who he hates, which I believe he does fairly frequently local entertainer of people who he hates. And welcome,
no,
Will.
No, no. Welcome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Glad to be here again.
So I want to let people know more than anything else about your podcast, because totally deserves a usually wide audience.
Right on.
And it makes me laugh out loud and till tears form
right on
in my eyes.
Yeah.
Very funny stuff. And, you know, I kind of made my own blurb for what I thought it was like, which is like Fireside Theater meets Jonathan Swift. Jonathan Swift was forced to come into modern times and live in Berkeley for 5 years.
I wish he would.
Until he started tearing his
That was on the ballot last year. I wish they would have put it through.
Yeah, bring Jonathan Swift back.
Yeah, whoop these kids into shape, man.
Yeah, that would have been an incredible amount of writing goes into these shows, it seems like.
It's pretty time consuming. Yeah. Which is why I did the Purple Onion a couple days ago, right? And it was scary because I hadn't been around people for so long.
Right.
You know, lock yourself up 12 hours a day, smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee, and then you leave the house to walk the dog or something. You feel like you're going to get shot.
It's weird being around people. I have that same thing. Yeah.
It's spooky because your head's there.
Yeah.
But your body's somewhere else, and there is a disconnect. So, but I'm taking a hiatus during Sketchfest until I get number 7 up.
Yeah.
So
you're doing all the voices yourself? And you're doing all the production work. You're doing all the editing.
Cutting and editing. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, where do you get all those special effects? So you got
LimeWire comes in
really
very handy on Apple.
So now let me ask you then: Do you sometimes base the narrative on what sound effects you've been able to find? Are you able to find the sound effects that you need?
There have been a couple of times where I'll have a completely different direction, and then like I accidentally got like a shotgun pump, you know, that sound, and I said, "No, we're going to go in a different." It's really like
something that you can use.
Total serendipity, or like a song. What was a song? I was looking for a song the other day, and I don't know. I totally forget what it was, but you know, just download the wrong song or the version that I didn't want, which actually turned out to be, it'll take you in a different direction. But
happy accidents.
They're
incredibly well produced. I mean, the sound, the way the sound.
I used to do that before I did comedy.
It's how you started, right?
Yeah, basically. made little cassette tapes and bought a four. I loved four tracks.
So, what kind of equipment are you using to record it?
The little laptop. The iBook G4
and just the built-in mic, or do
just
you have a good mic
into the mic?
Really?
Yeah,
amazing.
Amazing.
But then you sweeten it with Sound Studio has reverb and stuff. The only thing it doesn't have is like a good double track. Like with the four track, you know, you speak one time through and then go again.
Right.
Gaps, what program are you using?
Sound Studio. Have you heard of it?
No.
A lot of people haven't. It's not like...
Because there's like GarageBand that comes on a Mac that you can do multi-track stuff where you record one track, play it, and then you can record it.
Yeah, I think that's better with music, actually. So there's something that wasn't too happy with was spoken word, but Sound Studio is good. It's just that, you know, when you got to do that other voice, it's like cutting and pasting. Wow. So you got to line up that second track just right, you get that overlap. So it's...
So with all this material that you're putting together, are you also using it in your stand-up?
I did. Yeah. I don't know if you heard the Los Angeles bit, but I did.
Oh yeah, I love the Los Angeles bit. Yeah. Yes,
and that felt so good because I felt like I wrote.
Did you do it in Los Angeles? Have you performed?
I could do that
Los
anywhere
Angeles?
Else in the world, but Los Angeles.
Have you performed Los Angeles?
Last show I did in Los Angeles was the 29th of November, and they were really good.
Yeah.
I hate to say that like they were a special class of Los Angeles, but you know, I hate to be prejudiced against Los Angeles, but I do have that Woody Allen reaction. Like when I'm down there, I really do kind of get, if it's longer than 48 hours, I get kind of sick to my stomach, and I feel like I want to die or shoot somebody or...
You seem to have the reaction pretty much to everyone.
No. I got this reputation for being angry all the time, and it is because I'm angry all the time, but... what is that? That's not Terry Jones, is it? What's it? I just noticed that sticker there. Who is that?
This?
Yeah.
That's me. It's just a sticker.
Oh, it's you. I thought it was Terry Jones.
Thinking of Terry Jones. Wow. And your stuff does remind a little bit of Monty Python. It's like
Python's
that
Wraith.
But the Firesign Theater particularly, because the stuff sort of fades out and it moves into other thing and it fades back in. I grew up like
with them,
talking Firesign Theater ease for like years.
They're pretty freaky, man.
They were so funny.
Nick Danger, that was one of theirs. And
very brilliant.
It. They had something with chinchillas too. I remember there was
people stepping on chinchillas.
And the best sound effect I ever heard was a cigarette butt being put out on a chinchilla. I don't know how they got. What is it, frying or something? And it was, you could hear the thing squeak, and it was just.
I vaguely remember
that. That in itself was the only sound effect I've been able to get, and I look for it every podcast. I always want it for something. It's the sound of the computer starting that. Like a Mac or shutting down, even. Right. But I'll Google like computer sound effects, and then you hot, wet pussies. Can I say that on the podcast? We can say that.
Yes,
you can say anything. Too late now. You already said it.
Yeah, I don't know why it's weird with LimeWire because sometimes you type in, body falling on wood. Do you like to squirt in your mouth? I mean, there'll be that one little thing up there that just, how do you connect it to? I guess wood, woody, penis, squirt. Got it. It's like four moves to get to that. But that's a computer thinking on its own, though. It's like, it's making those four leaps for me that I didn't ask it to. Computers. Oh, well.
Suggesting programming it things you'll enjoy.
Yeah. If you like wood, you might like squirting on it.
Yeah. So when you play here in San Francisco, do you do it? It's kind of a different set than you do in New York versus LA?
No, actually, what I do in San Francisco, I usually, I try to take out some regional references and maybe localize it. But what works in New York works in San Francisco and vice versa. They're hip. San Francisco's hip. I've always felt it was hip. It's a little PC at times, but
well, that works its way into quite a bit of your
it does
material.
But, it's weird. My friend in New York says, "I'm surprised that you were able to do well in San Francisco, given
exactly.
the content."
Do you get people complaining?
I had a woman complain about Jesus, and I took on Muhammad at the during the Danish cartoons thing.
Right.
I still believe that you should have free speech. I don't know. It's a little antiquated.
Wacky guy wants to make trouble. Wants to start riots all over the world by being funny.
I took that on the last Mars show, and it wasn't. Nobody said like don't do that, but it was really weird. Like I took on like everything else, and then it seemed like when you opened that can of worms, it was like.
Well, you're jumping a few taboos in your material. On your website, do you have Michael Richards' apology? Which is hilarious.
It's a beautiful thing.
Hilarious, because we've already announced on this show how much we hate official apologies.
Oh, good. I'm so glad to hear that.
The whole ritual of the bullshit.
Was pretty fucked up about that. I mean, I heard it on the thing, and I thought, I wouldn't have done that. That is pretty bad to stick a fork. What do you say? Stick a fork and hang you upside down. But something was even sicker about going to Jesse Jackson I am the owner of black people. Have a seat and I'll bring in the black people and you can talk to that. When did Jesse Jackson become the spearhead for all blacks? That was just,
I represent the black
CEO
community.
The king of the blacks.
The king of the blacks is here.
Apologize to the black people.
You know what I mean? Like, come on.
Or Al Sharpton.
Al Sharpton.
They were kind of battling it out for a while there. Who would have him on their show to apologize?
Yeah. Who would get the...
I got to say, I saw the Letterman apology. And I was laughing because, you know, there was something really fourth wall absurdist about it because they were laughing on the letter. They thought it was a joke.
They didn't know anything about it. They thought it was a joke. Right. That was
pretty hilarious. He didn't have anything written, and it was I kind of felt bad for the guy. He's like, you know, Katrina and
he
like
was in
freight
pain.
Train, and yeah. He didn't even know what the hell was going on. But I've been in that situation where, you know, you're up on stage and some people are talking, and so I was like probably a little more ambivalent than I think other people. Plus, I have this, my wife and I disagree about this all the time, but I think in rage, all's fair. I mean, really, I hate to say it, and it doesn't make you racist, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, you know what? So I heard this analysis by somebody who said that when you're doing improv, like I don't do improv, but this analysis, when you're doing improv on a stage, there's this mentality that you get into where you're trying to see yourself through the eyes of the audience, and you're trying to do something that's going to get the most reaction out of them based on that, what you see as, you know, how they're seeing you.
Yeah.
And then in this situation where this guy was heckling him, his mentality basically went into that same mode where, okay, this guy, what can I do that would be the most...
Can I play off that?
Just blow it out. Just like...
Yeah.
And he was angry at the same time. So it was seemed plausible to me, although it's just as plausible that he's a racist. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I think it was when he tried to come back in at the end, he tried to make a Lenny Bruce thing because there was that real awkward, words shock, and then he didn't have anything where to go after that. Almost trying to make a social commentary. But I would like to know if they were saying cracker before, because I've heard mixed reports that I heard that they were there the whole time going, "You dumbass white cracker," and though cracker doesn't have the
cracker,
stigma,
cracker is so old. I haven't heard cracker in years.
But nonetheless, I
love crackers.
It's having a renaissance.
but I think if you're up there on stage and you're talking about soap or I don't know what he was talking about or something totally unrelated, and somebody in the audience brings up cracker,
him.
They've opened the racial door.
Oh, definitely.
Right.
If that's true, I hadn't heard that actually, but that's interesting.
Are you doing any of this kind of material on stage?
I wanted to do something. My wife doesn't think it's funny. I wanted to get some black plants. Like in the front row.
All right.
For the last 10 minutes of the show, just, you stupid ass motherfucker! Like, and make a big deal out about not saying anything. She's like,
well, gee, sir.
And then, you know, it would require a lot of money, but, you know, to wheel out a cross and set it on fire, put on a white hood. I mean, make a joke about, like, rather than an impromptu thing. Being very strategic about the racism, well thought out, just in case I have a cross in the back and a little Klan outfit. I mean, because I think
contingency measure.
Yeah, something real. A joke about the calculation of it, because this Kramer was a guy that just like fuse went off.
Yeah.
But I don't know, because Jesse Jackson's argument was he had it inside him all along.
Although if like you said, the guy was making racial remarks to begin with, it's a little bit more understandable. Although
I got a problem with the term the N word. I got to say this.
Yeah,
because we're all adults, and it seems
it's like the F word or all
the F word is one, and then also the P word. I don't know if you when I was
what
a
is
kid
the P word?
In middle school,
perpendicular.
These little girls, every time I said Pepsi, they'd giggle and go, "Oh, he said the P word." And it was so. It's a combination of puritanical.
It's a weird aspect of our culture. This whole the blank word.
It's
very infantile.
It's really
incredibly
word
infantile.
I had an African American literature course in my 20s, and the professor was. We're reading Toni Morrison. It was nigger all the way through there. And she'd go, the N-word. And I go, come on, Toni Morrison said it. All know. We're all adults. And if you can't talk about a word without using the word, we're pretty fucked, man.
It's the whole cultural appropriation. Like, if you're gay, you can call yourself a fag, but nobody else can call you a fag.
Right, there's this little segregation barrier that gets thrown up. I just want to say this about it. Have you seen Brian's song? I know it seems
song?
Like a stupid
Not
thing
lately.
To throw out of nowhere. Do you remember it?
It's a really long time ago.
You know about this story?
No.
Did my wife tell you about this?
No, but I know that you have a Netflix queue.
Oh, I got a couple of them going.
Okay, so talk to us about Brian's song.
Brian's song is a made-for-TV movie with James Caan, Billy Dee Williams. Came out in 71.
Right, okay, I remember that.
And It was like the first interracial pairing of football. I don't know anything about football, but they were interracial dorm roommates on the road. And it was like a breakthrough moment in 65. Anyway, this made-for-TV movie, there's a scene where Billy Dee Williams busts his leg. James Caan, his friend, is trying to get him to build his leg back up so he can get out there and, you know, be a good football player again. And there's a scene where he's doing, like, weightlifting or whatever, and Billy Dee Williams says, "Oh, man, I'm tired." And James Caan says, "Chicken nigger." And there's this moment in the movie you think, "Oh my, oh boy, it's going to blow up now." Billy Dee Williams laughs.
Yeah.
And he goes, "Oh, I get it. I'm supposed to be all angry now." And James Caan laughs. And then Billy Dee Williams' black wife comes out and says, "What? He called me nigger." And they're all laughing. And you know what? I'm sitting there watching this going, this is integration.
That was pretty advanced for its time.
Well, it's just like 71. Yeah. It's so close to Martin Luther King. It's like, this is true integration. These are two friends realizing they can say anything to
people
each other.
Being comfortable with each other.
People being comfortable and not going, they have special feelings. I haven't been through what you've been through. I mean, this is real friendship. Huh. It's the King dream. I love King. It seems like everybody's gone away from King, man.
Probably it's the case that in relationships, interracial friendships like that that are really close, maybe that does happen.
Right.
But I suspect it's pretty. It's so rare.
You wouldn't
rare.
Be running around the street doing that.
No, you wouldn't do it in company.
Right. But to have that like on an ABC or CBS movie of the week.
Right.
Almost to say like, because the implication is barriers can be broken down.
Did you see that movie? It was a recent movie called. Something new, and it was it marketed as like this romantic comedy, and somehow I ended up with it at my house. But it actually was pretty interesting, and the main relationship is interracial. The girl's black and the guy's white, and so there's like it just goes into like all of these issues. And and one of the scenes, they're lying in bed after sex or something, and he looks at her hair and he goes, "Can you take these out?"
The extensions, right?
And she goes, "What are you talking about?" And they'd never talked about that before, you know? And he goes, "It's not real, right? I mean, what does your hair really look like?"
Yeah.
And she goes, "How could you ask me that?" You know, and it's kind of like, it's a really good scene. Yeah, a lot of good scenes in this movie.
Right.
But that issue right there was interesting to see like portrayed, even bringing up something like the hair.
She was upset.
So. She got upset because, I guess, of an insensitivity.
Wow.
Of like even noticing or commenting that it wasn't her real hair.
Right.
And suggesting that she's trying to look less black or something, you know, and what that might say about the whole, you know, culture.
This was a couple of years ago, right?
Maybe. Pretty recent, actually. Yeah. It might have just been like a year ago. Yeah, it's very recent.
I think I remember that. It was a Guess Who's Coming to Dinner remake, wasn't it? Is that the same one?
I'm not familiar with that.
With the Catherine Hepburn.
So it might be, but this might be a remake of that. I don't know. It's called Something New.
Well, I have a friend who writes about biotech, and he said that in about maybe 10, 15 years, they'll be able to fuck with people's melanin.
Melanin is what?
It kind of controls your skin color.
Really?
And so people will be able to have any skin color they choose, including like weird skin colors. So like
plaid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plaid.
Keyword. Platter.
Yeah. What will
Paisley's, some Paisley's moved in next door. Really there goes cool. the neighbor. Yeah.
What will Al Sharpton do for a living then? Anyway, let us break and listen to an Al Franken routine, and we'll be
and
right
then
back.
And let's listen to a Will Franken routine.
How did I do that?
I'm gonna hear some Al Franken.
Let's not listen to Al Franken.
Let's not.
Tonight, it all comes down to this moment. Out of 6 billion people, only one can be him or herself. The season finale of American Individual.
And that's why I like mayonnaise on my sandwich.
Okay, what is your name again?
Pepper.
Okay, I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but you are a worthless pig whore.
Okay.
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 You're a cunt.
Okay.
And just a fat, gross slob of a pig.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm not saying this to be mean or cruel.
No, no.
But I think that you know.
Right.
That inside of you.
Uh-huh.
Deep down.
Yep.
You're a slimy, ugly cunt.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
Okay. So don't beat yourself up over this. But just remember as you go out there that you're just shit and you're a cunt and you're worth a sore.
Okay, thank you.
All right, get out of here.
Are you serious?
We're back and we're beautiful.
Yeah. And none so beautiful as Will Franken and his amazing locks. Aww. Of course, Aria used to have long flowing hair, but things change. Mm-hmm. You recently auditioned for David Letterman.
Mm-hmm.
Want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it was fun. The guy that ran it was Eddie Brill. He was a comedian that opens for the... I guess he warms up the crowd, the David Letterman show. And he told me because I do characters, you know, it wouldn't be a good fit for Letterman. And he...
That's weird. I'm sorry.
It makes sense, I think.
The format is kind of set there. It's like he throws it over to the comedian. The comedian does a quick...
Yeah, but the guy really came through because he had some context with the show in BBC America, and that did come through, and that was like... That's like you don't get any more closer to a childhood dream.
That is your dream, isn't it?
It was my dream as a kid. I'd say
I thought I read that.
To make your television debut on an English channel. I mean, that's just like
beautiful.
BBC One or Two?
BBC America.
What show? Oh,
America.
It's going to be over here as well. It's called The World Stands.
Well, what does it play on over there? What's the show play on over there?
I don't know. One of the BBCs.
Maybe any
one
of
them. One or two or.
My wife knows about it more than I do.
I just saw the extras, the end of season one of Extras, where he gets his own TV show, and he has this thing about he doesn't want to be on BBC One. He wants to be on BBC Two because it's...
it's better.
BBC One is more kind of like broad. News? Like it has a laugh track. The comedy has a laugh track, whereas BBC Two...
Oh, okay.
I might be getting the numbers mixed up. But maybe. Yeah, one of them is more experimental, which is where like The Office...
I think The Office played. Was BBC Two, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's where his character in Extras wants his... comedy to go
to be on BBC.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Anyway, it's I haven't seen the. There was a second season, I think, to that.
I haven't watched that one yet. Actually,
it's good. It's on
The Office, The British Office.
No, I'm talking about Extras.
His new one.
His new show.
I saw the first episode. I just don't like the fact that there's celebrities in it because The Office, to me, The Office was maybe the last great.
Yeah, but the thing is, they're not
of comedy,
but they're minor characters, and they also always play really repugnant versions of themselves.
Yeah,
which is kind of.
I saw Kate Winslet. She was doing.
Yeah, she was good.
She wanted an actress for a concentration camp movie. She wanted an Oscar for the.
She said her strategy for doing the Holocaust movie was.
You do
to
a Holocaust movie, you get an Oscar.
Right. The stuff you write, sketch comedy. It seems like you could easily write for TV shows. And I've heard Diana was telling me that you turn some of the stuff down. You don't want to.
No,
you
not do necessarily it. Turn down. But I was working with an agency or not an agency, some management TV development thing, and they were good people and they wanted to help me, but they were thinking of TV like to the exclusion of all else. And after a while, it was just. You know, it's really depressing after a while.
Because when I was listening to your radio show, I was thinking, like, you could revitalize Saturday Night Live single-handedly if they had any balls. I mean, they could just fire their other writers. And,
I've got more hope with the BBC now. I mean, this is like... But I don't want to get too much into fantasy, though, because I'll sit at home and go, yeah. But it's
are you serious, Tom?
I got to start with 5 minutes. I mean, they're going to do 5 minutes, which is like, which is good. But I mean, my fantasy is that I go over there. This is Sir George Wellington. He owns the BBC. He'd like to talk to you about an hour-long program. Oh, hi, Sir George. I mean, it's just, you know, but my mind will go.
Have you always done voices? Do a lot of... The Mick Jagger was... pretty dead on.
He only had one line, though, didn't he? All right, Keith, I've been good. Let's give him a carol. Yeah. Really like you yawning. An English person's really tired. I'm sleepy and tired. I saw this ABC show they're doing, like they're going to rob Mick Jagger. I keep seeing trailers for this.
I haven't.
Mick Jagger too. Damn it, I just said Mick Jagger.
Get an injunction.
Yeah, maybe. That'd be nice.
So are you going to perform in any clubs in England while you're over there?
No, I think I'm going to be doing something like all the 5 days that I'm over there. Like there's a live show to get you used to an English crowd, and then a couple tapings and stuff like that. And then the day it's just gonna be. I gotta see some stuff. I hope. I've never been there.
English crowds don't do that American thing where they like, you know, Americans will clap when they feel uncomfortable that they don't.
I would hope
they
not.
Feel guilty for not laughing
I've heard
at something.
That they, so I've heard they clap. Yeah,
and I see comics get annoyed at that all the time. Even American comics, but especially when I see like English comics in an American audience, they kind of they'll make this comment about why are you clapping? Stop clapping! It's annoying.
Yeah, the big thing is the pause. Like a lot of comedians will use the pause, and if you pause long enough and stare at your audience.
They'll
laugh just so you'll stop staring at them.
And that's why George Bush is stupid.
And then they'll hold it for everything.
laughing out of fear.
Yeah.
Laughing to make just to make a person continue scary, the act and get off stage.
Defensive laughter.
I've heard I think I have heard that the English are they're polite but they don't give you they're not going to give you anything. I mean you got to kind of like really
I think it also kind of is attached to the stereotype that you know, Americans are dumb. American audiences are a lot dumber than English audiences.
Well, I mean, a lot of American audiences, if they like the show, they seem like really desperate to laugh.
Yeah,
and it's like The Daily Show, you'll see some routines that are just not funny, and the audience is just laughing.
Jon Stewart gets
crazy.
Annoyed at that on a regular basis. He'll be like, shut up. I need to go on to the next joke. Why are you laughing?
Yeah. I was always in the minority. I like Craig Kilborn. When he was on for, what, a year?
That was he was good in that.
He was good.
You know what? He was good when it started because they didn't have a studio audience at first when that show came out. And I liked it. And then they changed it and I was like, man.
Now it's
and then it sucked until Jon Stewart got there. But
The thing with Kilborn, he had the attitude towards celebrities that David Letterman had when he first started, which is a real. I love watching
like, try to
Letterman
piss him off or see if he can laugh at himself.
I mean, it's a real. You know, you're on my show. I'm not going to suck your dick or anything. But like I've seen the few times I've seen Stewart, he'll like show Bush stuttering and then he won't even say anything. He just and does a little smirk and it gets like an ovation and it's like,
Yeah.
Colbert, I like. Colbert's always
doing a totally different thing.
Genius.
Colbert's got he's got his finger on the pulse of something.
Yeah,
I felt that when he was with Strangers with Candy. I mean, he's really really good. Yeah. So.
He's so smart. I mean, it's frightening. I mean,
and he just does that whole thing in character, like including all the interviews and all that stuff straight through. Jon Stewart switches over to being just Jon Stewart for the interview. You know, I always thought that when you know Colbert's show started, it was going to totally blow past Jon Stewart.
I used to be a total Anglophile, and then, until I started like really branching out when I was a kid, and I'd see like my dad always liked Benny Hill, which I never could understand. And I realized now that Benny Hill was probably for Americans. It's like
so is Benny Hill funny?
That would be BBC One.
Monty Python,
yeah, maybe.
Wonderful.
Well, Monty Python was so heavy, and then I'd you know rent some other stuff. There's a lot of Monty Python plagiarism that's gone on in England that doesn't go on over here. Like they'll take something. Like really similar to the dead parrot, make a sketch out of it. You know, it won't even be a dead animal. It'll be like a, I don't know, a guy who won't know how to do the right thing in a post office or something. But it's the same principle,
right?
You know, and you can see the crowd still loves it over there, but you can see that
they've been feasting on the carcass of Monty Python.
So I have too, though. I've really devoured the shit out of it, man. The Flying Circus episodes, which I always thought were so much better than the movies, because they're just these little. 30-minute nuggets of insanity. That are
I like the first movie, actually, better than the other ones. What was In Search of the Holy Grail. I thought it was the funniest.
Yeah, you know? I do, too. I think so, too.
I mean, the jokes in the Jesus movie were pretty obvious. And, you know.
And then Meaning of Life was...
Meaning of Life was pretty fun.
Something was missing.
I liked it.
I think it has some good
movies. I like Brazil, maybe, better than all of them, but that's not...
I saw Monty that recently. That's, the Netflix game. The... third time was a charm. The first two times, maybe I was too young, and then I saw this third time, I was like... Wow.
Yeah.
Because the last 30 minutes are like this cotton candy machine that keeps, you know, accumulating this nonsense and gets bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Highly recommended. If you haven't seen it, I'm sure everybody's seen it.
It's one of my favorites,
I'm telling everybody to go see something that they've already seen a million times.
But we love it.
Don't forget to watch
it. I actually didn't get, what was it, 12 Monkeys, another Gilliam film the first time I went to it.
And then
I saw it and I thought it was hilarious the second time.
Yeah. But I'm a sucker for time travel, though, too. I mean,
yeah,
it always leads to hilarity.
Like, I think the best part of Terminator is that time travel. You know, sitting there the whole movie going, "Wait a second, he's his own baby." You know? Wow, that's fun. Yeah.
Now, I read you're a big fan of the Video Hound movie review book.
Oh yeah, this is called the Great Movie Project, which I started in a fit of depression in Death Valley. I was coming off a pot. You know, I have to kick pot.
Like some people cold turkey.
Some people kick heroin. I have to kick pot because it's more dramatic. I get to feel like Al Pacino. So we went out to this random motel in the Death Valley desert. That was my plan, to spend a week there. Kick. So I had 200 classic
That's
movies.
That's hilarious.
And I thought, you know, there's a lot of old movies I haven't seen. So
this movie would be a lot better if I was stoned.
See, that's the problem. You start falling into that trap. You go, I've never put shoes on stoned. I've never taken a shower with shoes on stone. I wouldn't be like to stare at that corner of the wall stone. I'm going to do everything that I've done since I was a kid, but do it stone. I'm going to have a mommy stoned. It's kind of pathetic, you know? But anyway, I was watching these movies. I said, you know, there's a lot of old movies I haven't seen. So I had this Video Hound movie review book, you know, the with the dog on the cover.
Don't know it.
See, that's, that's always, every time I tell this story, people, nobody, I don't know that one. Leonard Maltin? No, it's the big, anyway, they give them bones, like 3.5 or 4 bones.
Really?
So I went through the whole thing, and I made it a project to watch every 3.5 or 4 bone winner. In other words, the first and second place, you know, reviews. And I'm watching on consecutive nights. One night I'll watch one from the beginning of the alphabet. The next night I'll watch one from the end of the alphabet. And I'm working my way inwards to the middle of the book. Currently I'm on, I just finished my last T last night. I'll start what I call the, my moon is now in S. My sun is in B. So tonight is the Buddy Holly story. And tomorrow, for example, will be Sweet Smell of Success.
Beautiful.
This will take the next, I think, estimating 7 years of my life.
Is this affecting your work? I mean, is this coming out in the comedy?
You know, it's good because I'm a sucker for these things called like structured randomness. And I used to do this, like, it always involves the alphabet. Like, I take, if I'm making a mixed CD or something for the road, I'll take the last letter of the last word.
I do
word.
Stuff like that, too. I think I got some kind of brain disease, actually.
And then it was like obsessive compulsive or something.
Yeah, it is. Share it. Some kind of obsessive compulsive kind of thing.
We have to have a panel with the two
Wait,
of you.
Wait, but I don't get it. Can you finish the...
With the CD? Did?
You said, yeah, start with the last letter.
Okay, like,
letter.
You like a Kink song, Sunny Afternoon.
Right.
To find the next song, I take the A from Afternoon and go choose the band.
Okay.
So AC/DC, Highway to Hell, then go to H's are always the Hollies, Long Cool Woman in a black dress, which would be a D to get Devo, and yeah. So you have the illusion of freedom, which is what I like. I don't like just freedom, like, because then you end up with like a dildo in your mouth and, you know, crawling on the floor going, "We live in a police state." You have the illusion of freedom. Like, all this great music, it's all diverse, but it has a pattern, and only I know about it.
Right. Yeah. And then sometimes it can surprise you, because the songs can come up together.
And I'll tell you what, this has introduced me to so many cool directors, and the rules are, you know, only when I'm in town. We don't have cable, so it's not like I'm... That means for an hour and a half a night, I have TV. Mm-hmm. And when I'm traveling, you take a break. It's on reprieve. But these... things will happen. Like, I saw Battleship Potemkin and Unforgiven on two consecutive nights. Both movies feature a corpse on public display in a box with a cardboard sign around the neck, lit up by candles.
Nice.
And the odds of that is, this happens all
lit
the time.
Lit up by candles.
Some weird synchronicity.
Yeah.
In the thing, yeah. So... but that's, maybe it is kind of like my work, though, too, because it's like, there's a flow there.
Yeah, definitely. Right.
Yeah.
You know, even if nobody else can see it, they... the flow is so important to me. Yeah.
Is there a reoccurring theme in your work at all? I mean, a phrase, a word?
No, I've been...
So I was talking to somebody last night. They were talking about how, like, for instance, Melissa Etheridge has angels in her songs. And a playwright, I know Larry Myers, is obsessed with religious icons. And Christopher Durang definitely always has Catholicism in his work.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
Do you get your characters? I mean, one of the things that, like, you do these great impressions of ridiculous, like, PC, like, liberals. And you actually get this from, like, going to parties and having conversations with people, and you have, like, a specific individual in mind that you had a conversation with?
See, my thing with the PC thing is I'm an old school liberal in the sense of the I don't necessarily rule out violence, for example, or the romance of war, or the romance of Western civilization. You know, because I mean, I have to acknowledge that Western civilization, for example, is responsible for the Beatles and Monty Python. And that to say goodbye to one is so I'm for the preservation of the past. Like the Kinks sing a lot about. That's why Kinks are one of my favorite bands, because they have so many songs about, you know, the glory of Queen Victoria and, you know,
Muswell Hillbillies.
God Save Where
They
We
even
Came
did an
from.
Album, Preservation. Actually.
Preservation, two albums set in the Village Green Preservation Society. So I think, you know, when I meet people with these kind of... I think there is a certain tyranny that happens where people all sort of have this kind of group think about an issue and... it becomes really impenetrable.
Well, I mean, you do these characters like I know them. You know, it's like, I know that person.
I'm working on one now. I was in the shower. I had this idea for the start to the next podcast was somebody left something on this bulletin board in our building. See, people will put up these political cartoons every now and then, like, right. like Christians are to blame for everything. That'll be the subtext. Of, so then I'll go upstairs, and just out of sheer retaliation, I'll print up like an anti-jihad cartoon and stick right. it up next to it. And the one I got was Islamism plus 9/11 equals 2,996 murder. More to just like, can we have a debate about this instead right. of assuming that every one of us here like blames Pat Robertson for everything. So then somebody the next day, rather than tearing that down out of anger, had written this long note that said, how about this equation? Oil plus all religions plus ignorance plus 9/11 equals reality. So then I went upstairs and was going, George Bush equals Hitler. No, try it again. Israel equals Nazis. No, look at the question, take your time. Okay. Oil plus all religions minus Islam equals real. No, the question is 2 plus 2 equals. Oh, 5. No, not 5. If I have 2, and this is just struggling with this question, and it's going to turn into like an advertisement for UC Berkeley tenure track professors. Thanks to Quiet Desperation, I now have a way to live.
You have a great riff on one of your shows, actually, where the person is describing the Zionist conspiracy and like yeah. all these different
he
terms,
uses all the Hitler.
Combinations, yeah. and it really is.
That's
hilarious.
That's the Monty Python thesaurus type comedy.
Do you script out an entire? I know you might change it in the middle. Mm-hmm. But you have an entire script for an entire show when you start. I mean,
it'll usually like be like at the most like a 10-minute chunk, uh-huh. and it's usually like. Not written out, but like in the morning, I'll wake up and I'll go, put that together. You know, or like in the shower. I mean, I know I want the problem solving thing to go into an ad. That's going to get turned off, and it's going to actually be a real Berkeley professor talking to his class about how that guy should have taught the girl who was struggling with her equation. You know, by getting rid of power and let's arrange the desk in a circle. Even if there's one desk, let's cut it up and put that in a circle. You know, all about the circle. Let's get rid of authority. Let's do this. And then that was going to go into a guy on top of the bell tower shooting at people. Then a New York Times reporter is, can I ask you a question? Yeah, why are you shooting at pedestrians? Oh, I'm mad at Israel. Oh, you're mad at Israel? Yeah. They just have this eat some peanut butter jelly sandwiches up there. Pff, take that, you Zionist. You need me to pose?
Okay. You need me to pose?
Yeah, I just got done reading that Jimmy Carter book. It was really cool, man. I learned about apartheid and how they're taking the land away from the Palestinians. Yeah. So, anyway, but I didn't know anything about the Middle East until I came out here. And unfortunately, I kept weighing in on the wrong side of what everybody else was weighing in on, which is I don't want to denigrate Western civilization for all of its faults. I mean, it's almost like I want to pass around this email that says, like, you know, everybody contribute. What is one thing that you have today, thanks to Western civilization? You just pass around that list. You know, I got Beethoven, the Beatles, Baklava. Right. That's Western civilization.
Nice pair of pants and
hair gel. Podcast.
Podcast.
Yeah. Bill Franken.
I'm afraid we're going to have to let you go in a few minutes. I do want to tell everybody who's listening to this show that you can't possibly listen to this show and not listen to Al Franken's show. Yeah, Will Franken's show. I'm sorry. I don't know.
We've got to get that chip that Al Franken put in your head.
I don't really like it. Do you like Al Franken? I don't even really like Al Franken.
I don't know, but you know, really I was down at UCB Theater in Los Angeles. There was a guy, they were doing a spoof of Al Franken. Uh-huh. And one of the, I think Matt Besser from the UCB, and man, it was great.
I know Tom Davis actually used to be.
Oh, especially when he's like being a pundit and not a comedian, he's just intolerable.
He was funny on Saturday Night Live with the Franken and Davis show.
Franken and Davis, yeah, I know Tom Davis actually.
You do, yeah.
Yeah, and so therefore I know that Al Franken's an asshole. But
wow,
what can you say? But people should listen to that show, and what we'll have. A link to it on areyouseriousradio.com. And what's coming up in terms of performances?
Oh, there's two at the Sketch Fest as part of Sketch Fest at the Eureka Theater. Is that an address on there? 215 Jackson Street at Battery, Friday at 10:30 and Saturday at 8. That's a part of Sketch Fest. Two different shows, I think about 40 to 45 minutes apiece. I'm going to try to pull out the Filing Cabinet of the Future, which is my combination of Office Life and Stanley Kubrick's 2001 Space Odyssey and It's going to be fun. It's going to be out in public again. And then the Throckmorton Theater, which I'm going to make my debut there. I've never played there. I heard some great things about it.
I will come out to see you because I've been out there.
Yeah. I've heard
it's
some great
theater. Yeah.
Really at Mill Valley, and that's 8 p.m. on Tuesday, January 23rd. So 19th, 20th, and 23rd, willfranke.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Let's go out with another Will Franken routine.
Hello, Mrs. Brownstone. We have the results from your daughter's aptitude test here, and they show that she's mentally retarded.
What did you say about my daughter?
Oh, I'm sorry. I said that your daughter is mentally retarded.
I don't understand.
I'm sorry. I have a disease where every time I say mentally retarded, I sing it.
Love's the only weapon. Shit!
Serious.